Hello, everyone, and welcome to Confessions of an Actress. I'm your host, Meredith Patterson, and I am so incredibly grateful to have my first guest in a long time on this podcast, my friend Serena Hart. This is episode and interview 94, you guys. It's pretty exciting. And talking to her, it kind of reaffirmed a lot of things that I wanted to talk about on this podcast, which is balance, connection to our artistry, why we do what we do, and the hustle and bustle of getting to the destination that we think we should get to as an artist, like Broadway or a big city or any of that, because both Serena and I live in Whitefish, Montana, and we came here by way of California, by way of, you know, pursuing our art in a big city and then going, nope, that's not for us. And it's so nice to talk to somebody who has that same feeling. And I kept finding myself nodding in agreement with everything she was saying in the balance of it all. And like, I just don't have that thing. And I do, and I did for a long time, because I obviously lived in New York for 20 years and was in LA and was doing the hustle and bustle. But there was this just fatigue that I started to get, because it's just really hard sometimes. So I just want you guys to connect to that when we start talking about that. It's so, I could have talked to her literally for another hour. Like, it was just awesome to finally get to talk to her. And as I mentioned in the interview, we live in the same town. We have not hung out. And it's not funny how that can happen. It's just life gets in the way and we just don't make a plan. So we're going to make a plan, Serena. And I just thank you so much for being my guest. So without further ado, the amazing and the incredible Serena Hart. We have known each other off and on, like in passing, really, for like 4 years since I've lived here. But it takes a podcast for us to have a one-on-one conversation that's longer than
5 minutes. 5 minutes on a river trail.
Seriously, I think the longest conversation I've had with you was when I would run into you on my walks and you would be out, you know, with your dog who's right there. So sweet. Yes. But my God, it's so nice to have you. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on my podcast.
Oh, thank you. I apologize for the technical difficulty. Don't know what's going on there.
I don't know. It's like the gremlins of the world. I mean, I've, but that's okay. It's good. It happens. And
I know. I'll blame Mercury and the eclipse and,
and the earthquake in New York that just happened this morning. I don't know. Like all that stuff. That's what's going on.
Everything.
But thank you so much for, oh my gosh, for being here. I just so appreciate it. And I'm so excited to kind of get to know you a little bit. A little bit more, my friend.
Yeah.
Fellow Californian.
Yeah. Where in California are you from?
I'm from, it's technically not Northern, you know, because you know California is ginormous. It's outside of Berkeley.
Oh, that, where?
Pleasant Hill.
Oh, that's definitely Northern.
Not Pleasant Ten, but Pleasant Hill, California, which is East Bay. But And you're from where?
San Francisco.
Oh, you are.
Yeah, that's where we started.
Yeah, that's where you started. But I know we talked about this briefly, but take me back. Tell me a little bit about yourself, because we are California girls, but you have this awesome Valley girl accent that I envy.
Well, family originally started it. I was born in Hawaii, and then my dad was in the Air Force, and then when they were done, he was done, moved to San Francisco, and that's where my grandparents were. And then mom decided she wanted horses when I was about, 7 or 8. And so she moved us to the San Joaquin Valley and east of San Francisco. And so I was there for about 10 years and then moved back to San Francisco when I was 19 and was kind of based there, went all over California, moving around. But that is generally where I spent the majority of my time when I was in California.
Yeah, it's so crazy because I so don't have that amazing Valley Girl accent. I can try to put it on, but it's terrible. And what? So you're a military family, so move from Hawaii, which I didn't know, which is super awesome. And my family moved to the Bay Area as well. My grandfather was in the Navy, so we
Oh,
have
okay.
in common.
Yeah. Dad, once he was done with the Air Force, both parents started practices and medical practices, and so didn't move around, as a kid after that. But as a young adult, was always moving around here to there, San Diego, Los Angeles. Did a nice long stint in Sacramento for a bit. And yeah,
Yeah, and
roamed around.
we know as Californians that it's like totally different countries sometimes.
Oh,
The
yeah.
vibe of San Diego versus Sacramento, my God.
Oh, yeah. Complete nor Northern California and Southern California are completely different states, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. So how did you become like how did you get into, because I know you as a percussionist, which is so funny. Because getting to see you be an actress for the first time really on stage this year was just, we'll get to that. It just blew my mind. I was so just like, oh my God. But how did you, because you didn't come from maybe a family of artists, but how did you get exposed to being an artist? Because you have many facets of what you do.
When I was a kid, I did the little school plays and things like that. And I always was much more, I was very interested in percussion. I was always banging on pots, pans, blah, 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 but always playing dress up, always doing something creative. But where it really started was when I went freshman year of high school. I wanted to be on the drum line in band, and they didn't allow girls on the drum line. The girls played the wind instruments, girls played, other things. And so that was not a battle I wanted to take on, because one of the things about where I grew up, I was the only black kid in my school. So I already had a lot of things that I was dealing with. And so taking on that fight really wasn't something I wanted, I could think of. And it was just like, oh, they said no. Okay. I still want to do something creative and be a part of something. And so my school, which was very, very, very small, in the country, didn't have a theater classes or anything. And so, but there was a drama club, and there were just a few kids that wanted to put on a play, basically, and a teacher that wanted to put on a play. So we did that, and we did the first play I ever did was MASH, like a high school play was MASH, played just a random nurse doing something, whatever.
Nice.
And yeah, that's kind of, it started my interest in theater, but I ended up switching high schools and went to this much bigger school. And I remember auditioning for something, and I got a call back, and I was so intimidated and scared that I didn't end up going back. And so I fumbled around for quite a while. And then I found myself in a production years later, cast as the lead in Extremities. I don't know if you know that show.
Yeah.
So I was cast as the lead in Extremities in a production that was very out of control, very inexperienced director. And the lead actor and I mean, there was no real choreography. There was no real psychological support for such an extreme subject matter. And at one point, during rehearsal, the lead actor, during our struggle, dropped me, and I fell and hit my head on a cement floor and got a concussion, completely lost my lines, completely lost everything. Eventually, it all came back. We did the show, but after that, I I felt theater was totally unsafe and I wanted nothing to do with it.
Oh my gosh.
So I didn't do anything in that realm for at least 8 years. And I found myself back in San Francisco. And I really was directionless for the longest time. I was a major band groupie in Sacramento and just would always just wanted to be in music, wanted to do all this stuff, but just couldn't figure out my way in. And then I was at a belly dancing class in San Francisco, just decided to randomly take a belly dancing class. And afterwards, there were some people like standing around, milling around for a salsa class. And I asked them what was going on. And they were doing a production of Romeo and Juliet, but set in Latin America somewhere. And so they were taking salsa classes and they were like, we need some extra people. Do you want to jump in and audition? And I was like, yes. So I ended up in this production of Romeo and Juliet, taking salsa classes. They took capoeira classes. It was absolutely brilliant and beautiful. And this theater company, I don't even remember what they were called. They were such fun people. And because of that, it kind of sparked my interest in theater again. And I ended up auditioning for a show called Action Movie the Play, and which is one of the still to this day favorite shows I've ever done. The audition was one of the greatest things. The director's at the back of the theater and he's like, he wanted people that knew action movies and knew science fiction and knew the X-Men and all these characters, because it was, you know, a complete farce and parody in all these movies. And so he's like, all right, I want to hear you scream out like James T. Kirk Khan. And it was like, Khan, you know, and he just picked the people that would just go to town on a heavy bag, because there was tons of fight choreography. And oh my God, that play just brought like the love of acting and everything back to me. And I played Cyborg Woman. I had to do tons of fight scenes with a big strap-on dildo. There were car chases, there were chainsaw fights, it was absolutely one of the funniest things I've ever done. And so after that, I moved to Los Angeles to pursue acting and shaved my head bald and just got, you know, worked with some really fun people. But Los Angeles and I didn't get along too well. Ended up having extremely just psychotic roommates the day after I moved to Los Angeles. 9/11 happened. My roommates were insane. Like, it was just wild. So ended up moving.
To just interrupt you a second, like, you are explaining the ups and downs, emotional, and like people that you interact with in this business that can have like a bad influence, like hitting your head on the cement, and then like mm-hmm. an amazing influence, like the artistry of San Francisco and some of the theater scene there. And then having the psycho roommates, like, and then 9/11 happening, like all of the things that we endure as actresses or actors, yeah. artists that can derail us from so many things. And you're like, just kind of getting your footing and just starting and getting inspired. And then it's really nuts. Like, to just hear the journey already of what you've gone through.
Oh man. Yeah, it's quite the zigzag pattern, because I'm moving back from Los Angeles. My family needed help with my grandparents who were in kind of decline. So I ended up moving and helping them, and really didn't find myself in any creative projects after that. I met a man after the grandparents passed away, ended up buying property in Santa Cruz and living outside for months and all this stuff. And then all of a sudden he was like, you know, I know a really cool place and you want to go check it out, because we'd road trip all the time, and it was here in Whitefish. And I was like, sure, I'll go check it out. And so came here hung out with wonderful friends of his. And they're like, hey, we're going to go to this theater and go catch a show. You want to do it? And I'm like, guy, you guys got a theater here? And they're like, yeah, it's great. And so the O'Shaughnessy was completed maybe 5 years by that point. And the O'Shaughnessy here in Whitefish. And so I saw a show there, Lone Star Laundry and Bourbon, something like that. Oh my gosh. I was so impressed with the acting, with the set, with everything. I was like, wow, you guys have a really great theater here. And over the course of a couple of years, Paul and I, my ex, he and I would come visit Whitefish. And then finally he's like, do you want to move here? And I was like, I kind of do, because I just wasn't doing anything in Cali. And when we moved here, we went to park the loading truck, came into town to eat, went to Mama Blanc or Chow Mambo. And this couple randomly asked us to join their table because we were waiting around and they're like, you guys look really hungry. Just come sit with us. And the man, his name's Joe, he asked me what it was about, what I do, and I was like, well, I do theater and all this. And this is before I started even playing drums, mind you. This is before I even started playing drums.
I was waiting for you to get to the drumming part because I'm like, you're so good at it. And like so continue.
Yes, this is 2004. And when we moved here, and the man, he was like, you do theater, well, you need to go to the O'Shaughnessy Theater and talk to Nancy Nye. She's the artistic director and you need to audition for something and blah, blah, blah. And so I did. I walked into the O'Shaughnessy and I just introduced myself to Lonnie Poro and Nancy Nye and Gail McLaren. They just happened to be there. And I was like, hi, I'm Serena and I am an actor and I'm interested in theater and just want to know when your next auditions are. And they were like, in fact, it's in a couple days. And within a week and a half, I was rehearsing for Diary of Anne Frank.
Oh my God, that's so awesome. And
when they said it was Diary of Anne Frank, I'm like, okay. And I read the script and I was like, well, there's only one part, but it's so far from type. It was Miepke's little Austrian woman that it helped the family. But I was like, screw it. And that's what they cast me as. And it's the first time I ever played somebody that really existed. And looking up her history, she was so phenomenal. We were the same age. And what struck me the most after doing that play was when Nancy cast me, she said, you might not look like her. You might not be that, but you captured her essence. Mm-hmm. And that was all that was important to her. And it struck me as so amazing that a community like this would not blink an eye and think oddly about this little Black girl playing some Austrian woman in a place where there are no Black people around. They're Nazis. There are no Black people around. And they didn't blink an eye. They didn't think anything of it. They just loved the performance. And that endeared me so intensely to the Whitefish community and the Whitefish Theater Company, because they threw me in plays that I never in a million years would have imagined I'd be doing in California.
What's so crazy about that, and just to kind of touch on that for a second, is because California is such a land of diversity. I mean, growing up in the East Bay, it's like you see people from all walks of life, you know, mm-hmm. gender and all of it. And here you really don't have it in Whitefish, Montana. You don't have a lot of diversity, if any. Yeah. So you have this, and you're so right about that feeling and that, that just, you know, it feels like that theater and a lot of other theaters in this area have that kind of like, well, you have the essence, so it doesn't matter what you look like. And that's mm-hmm. Don't you wish everyone in the world felt that way about so many things? It just really is about the human being and them portraying the character and the essence of the character. And it's one of the things that's endeared me to this town as well. And I've been here as long as you, but it really is something that makes me just light up.
It is so special. And I mean, there was one time where Nancy wanted me to audition for Dancing at Lunacia. And it's about, you know, four Irish sisters.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Nancy, I think that might be pushing it a little too far. We just were laughing. But then the junior college, FVCC, was auditioning for The Cripple of Inishman. And Martin McDonagh is one of my absolute favorites. I am a Irish fanatic. And I auditioned for that, for the role of Auntie Kate. And Auntie Kate wasn't his real auntie. There's a quote in the play, and that's all I needed. That's all I needed, you know? And I was in and had this hilarious time being able to do, I was like, I got to do my Irish show.
You know? Yes. No, it's awesome. I wish I would have seen that. Funny. I'm sure you would have been brilliant in it. Like, really.
Oh, God. So funny. And I just love his material. So it was such a joy. So I definitely, you know, am sensitive to boundaries in that case. But it's just, this theater company is a dollar. And I have definitely worked with theater companies that will kind of pigeonhole you. It's like, oh, you know, they only call if they need somebody to play a maid or somebody to play a this, you know? And I'm like, no, that's not what I'm interested in. And it's been a great ride.
Isn't that what really being an actor is supposed to be about? An artist is that you're conveying the character. You're not trying to be yourself. You're right. Not coming at it from being yourself. You're coming at it from a place of being a chameleon and also having I never knew Nancy, but like having the essence of the character, that's the most important thing. And when, and we'll get to you playing Annie Wilkes in the Whitefish Theater, Stephen King's Misery, because when I saw that casting, I know you and David Blair is a brilliant actor and one of your really good friends and becoming my friend. He's just a brilliant artist here in Whitefish.
Oh, yeah.
And when I heard you guys were cast together, I was like, oh, my God, I have to go see this. I love it anyway. I just love a horror play.
And yeah.
Like the first horror play that Whitefish Theater has done, I believe. But going and seeing it, knowing you as a percussionist, and we'll get to that as well, knowing you a little bit as an actor, because I saw you in that 2020 film, the musical is canceled. Oh. The musical. Which was, you know, the pandemic was an awful, awful time, but it, you know, had some things that emerged that were really fun, like that musical that you did with our mutual friend, Erica.
Oh, yeah.
But going and seeing Misery and seeing you portray this, oh my gosh, this character of Annie Wilkes, you know, you have to love her. And I already, in our few moments of being able to talk and interact and, you know, I've already like, oh my God, I love Serena. And like, she's going to scare the crap out of me. I just have a feeling. But you have to love her. And that's going to the essence of the character. You have to feel kind of sorry for her, even as she's doing all these horrible things.
Mm-hmm.
So take me to when they announced that they were doing this play and how that came about with you. Because I think you really manifested you doing this part. I think you made it happen, because I feel like there was no one else really, like in your mind, no one else in this town for that part, like really. And you proved that point when you so brilliantly.
Thank you. When they announced they were doing Misery, I texted David Blair going, oh my God, can you imagine if you and I did Misery and we could just scare the shit out of this town? And that was like a year ago. Or more. And he was just like, wouldn't it be great? And I was like, oh man, everybody and their mother is going to come out for this audition. And it's funny because I really didn't. It was this little teeny hope in the back of my mind, but I'm just like, oh God, that's a long shot. And when it started, the audition started coming up, I was just thinking to myself, I I always was just like, I want to go to these auditions because I want to see what everybody's going to do. But I just felt I was so far from type. And I read the script. I remember reading the script and I felt it was really awkward. Like I couldn't feel like I couldn't get those lines out right. And it just felt really awkward. And I'm like, I don't know, but I just want to go to the audition. And I couldn't make it to the first round of the first day. And so I ended up going the second day. So I didn't know who had auditioned and who had been around. And I was bummed that I couldn't see everybody's stuff. But then the second night, we got going and I was watching everybody. And I was like, man, ooh, she looks like, ooh, yeah, that was really good. And oh, yeah. And then Kim called me up. And I don't know what came over me, but it was just kind of like, I just leaned into the words were coming out so awkward. And I just really leaned into just being strange. I was like, all right, then really lean in. And there was something about the silence of the room. And I was like, I've got them. Yeah. I've got them. And I'm like, okay, dude. Because I have always been fascinated by the darkness. I've never shied away from the dark. I started reading Stephen King at 10 and always was into, I'm not necessarily into horror movies, but I read a lot of horror as a kid and I read a lot of Clive Barker. And then I was just like, all right, dude, let's go there and like be, because I was very, very familiar with Misery and I read it twice before the audition, and so it's just like I love the dark psychology of just human being human and obsession and love and all that stuff. And so I was just, there was some point in that audition where I just wanted to find just this, I wanted them to be so freaked out.
And we were, oh my God, that is the one thing I have to tell you. In talking to Kim, she said there was this frightening moment when you auditioned that got you the part. Now, I don't know what she meant by that. I don't know when that was, but seeing your performance, there were many moments of what you're talking about where the you felt the air being sucked out of the room, like, and the simplicity of you brought us to you. Like that's one thing about your performance is that it's when you don't see somebody acting, they're just being, and you know that character so well, you know that genre so well, and you, every moment was full and every moment was with intention. And I felt really bad for Annie. I felt really bad for her. Like I wanted her to fall in love. I just wanted Paul to be like, okay, I'll stay here with you. And, you know, we'll, you know, I'll just write a bunch of like, I'll write Misery and all this stuff. Like I really, and that is kind of the dark and the light of that story for me is that like, you have to feel that way about Annie and you just did it immediately and just sucked us in. And I wanted to see it again. And I saw the last performance.
Oh, wow.
Which you only did how many performances?
Seven.
Which is crazy because like, I think about how much that character would have grown and even just, you would have found new things if you had more time. Did you feel that way?
Oh yeah. I mean, she was hard to play. She's a hard person to be because I felt like, I mean, very immediately when we started rehearsing, it was about how she walked, like finding her heaviness. There was a heaviness and a solidity to her. And I remember reading that in the book about how he talked about this heaviness and solidity to her. And so I felt like, you know, one huge thing was lowering my frequency as a person because I'm a very bubbly and just goofy person. And Kim was just like having to beat the juvenile out of me because I'm a very juvenile person. And Kim's just like, I'm seeing the kid, God, bring her down, you know? And
yeah, you're and very jovial. So that makes sense.
Very jovial.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and I'm very giggly and stuff. And there are times like Kim's like, save that for when he mentions the book. Only when you're talking about Misery in the book can she do that? Can she giggle? Can she, you know? And so fine. It was so like Kim, this fine tuning. I mean, we jumped in and it was 0 to 60 from the moment we started. And her walk was so important to me. I wore my big floppy shoes from the very get-go. I had a very specific outfit for rehearsals, and I wore it every single time because it just gave me that shuffle and this feeling of weight, you know?
Yeah.
And you heaviness.
Really, and that shuffle and that heaviness and that, it, I mean, that's so smart. It's such a, you know, it's interesting because I don't know if you have training in like some people can train for years in a certain method of acting and things like that. Mm-hmm. And some people just kind of take what they're instinctually feeling. And, you know, I'm kind of a mixture of the two. Like I've had some training, but I've also kind of been like, you know, my instincts always feel right. And like someone like you, like your instincts of like, I have to wear these shoes. I have to find the walk. I have to find, even your accent was gone, which was like your accent was gone. And I was like, oh my gosh, but you still had that sweetness to you, which I really feel like is just your essence, even though you might've mm-hmm. been muting yourself a little bit, you still have that, which I feel like is where I instantly, you know, you have instant like ability, if that makes sense.
Yeah. That, as far as the voice, that's the first thing, the very first thing I find with a character is how they speak. It is pretty, pretty, pretty rare that I've ever done a role that actually sounds like me.
Yeah.
I purposely get rid of that immediately. That's the very, very first thing that goes. And then physicality, I'll find, you know, and it is a combination of instinct and training. Cause I got my degree. I went back to school and finished my degree in theater in Missoula because I had started that in San Francisco in college. And then I finished my degree in Missoula, did a couple national tours with the Montana Repertory Company, and went to Seattle for a year and performed with ACT and Seattle Rep and a couple little other theater companies. And so, so it's like instinctual and just drawing upon life and knowing humans, nonverbal communication is a huge, huge thing for me in theater, in life in general. And, but the likability of a character is so important because if I don't like a character, they lose me immediately.
Especially
I've seen movies.
A villain. You have to kind of like a villain.
Especially the villain.
Yeah.
They have to be a human and they have to be whatever their motivations are, whatever they're doing is right for it. They are making decisions that are right for them. And I feel there is very, very, very little pure, pure evil in the world. I feel like even some of the worst people still have something that people are drawn to, that people that like their moments, that they do things that are out of love, you know, and things like that. And so for me, that is one of the most crucial things of any character I'm playing, is like people still have to like them for whatever reason. Otherwise, they're lost, you know, people won't invest in them and they won't care.
Absolutely. Yes,
yeah.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw a television show not long ago, and as much as I tried, I couldn't stand the lead character. I did not care what happened to him. I did not, and it just bummed me out because I'm like, I really want to be into this show, but I cannot watch this person. There's nothing redeeming about them, and I just out, you know, six episodes in, I can't dick it anymore.
I know. So you mentioned that you finished your degree in Missoula and then went on and did a national tour, and you actually played, you know, it's so funny because you have played some characters and been in some plays that like I would kill to be in, like Midsummer Night's Dream. You played Puck, which is like the epitome. And I was just thinking about something that I was talking to a friend about. In terms of community theater, I'm going to throw a lot of like amazing compliments towards community theater in this country versus Broadway. People seem to think, and I mean people by the general public, not those of us who are in the business, that Broadway is everything. That's the top of the mountain. It's the best of the, you know, the best shows. You're going to see the best storytelling. And the truth is that the smallest theaters that you walk into, you can see the most amazing actors, the most amazing storytelling, the most amazing direction, set design, all of the collaborative art that is theater and storytelling. And that is something that I have over and over again. My favorite shows that I've done are those I've done in the smallest places. And I don't think you would have, you know, we both ended up in Whitefish, which I feel like is a whole other podcast. We could talk about that.
Yeah. But
the fact that we're in this incredible artistic community that is so fulfilling, and you have so many more opportunities to stretch that storytelling muscle that you wouldn't necessarily have if you were in New York or LA. So talk about that a little bit and how that feels.
It is a very different. I remember one time sitting around with like Mike Eldred and Nick Spear and some other people just marveling at the talent in this valley. And it's like, what's the common denominator here? And Mike Eldred was like, I think it's because we're all just really nice. And so that cutthroat attitude didn't suit us. And I struggled with that. I never felt I was, there were times where I didn't feel like I was damaged enough, you know, to be an artist, or I was, you know, I never felt that dog eat dog cutthroat capitalist, you know, just trample over everybody. I felt I had a conversation with myself living in LA, and I felt like I have to become a monster to live here.
Yeah.
And I didn't like what that meant to me, to, you know, that I would have to feed so much into my own ego and really lose a lot of this part of me that I cherish so much, which is that nice part, you know, that person that is really doing this out of the joy of it. And because I love it personally, and it's something that I love to do, but it's also very hard for me financially. I am a terrible freelancer. It gives me great, great anxiety to have my paycheck dependent on this kind of gig work, you know, and the unsurety of it. The whole starving artist thing just terrifies me to no end. And I'm really, really bad at it. I know people that thrive in that their electricity bill goes off or their water gets shut down and they just plow through. And that just fills me with such it diminishes my quality of life so much.
Yeah.
That I felt like I had to make a choice. I just simply had to make a choice. And I have gone back and forth with that, with performance based activities being my sole income, or having the day job and then doing it on the side. And I have to admit, doing it on the side, I am able to maintain a balance in life that is a much more comfortable and joyful for me. And so I kind of just decided that, yeah, I'm going to just create my life here in Whitefish and do these performance, you know, and act in the shows with the theater and kind of take that pressure off of myself to be in the cities. Or, and I am not the fondest of plane travel. So I know a lot of actors that travel back and forth to New York or travel to LA a lot. And that I'm kind of a nester, and I'm terrible with, plane travel. So it's like, yeah, I just kind of do projects that are around here.
And you do them so well. And what is you've said so many things that I'm like nodding. Absolutely. I am the same. You know, I felt, and I've been in those cities and felt like I was beating my head against a wall, and all of the things that you were talking about becoming a monster. I really do feel like it's amazing to me that I've gone through all the things I've gone through in my career and I didn't become a monster, because mm-hmm. you just feel like you have to stomp on people to get to the top or do things that you don't want to do, you know, and play the game is what I call it. And I hate mm-hmm. it. And also the adrenal fatigue, like mm-hmm. you and I feel like you said so many things and I'm like, we're so alike. It's crazy. I literally said, I was like, I'm so tired of just the hustle. I'm yeah. such a nester. I, you know, I had my kids and I was like, I just want to nestle and snuggle and do, you know, do great work. And that yeah. really is what it comes down to. And it's funny because I had a friend that I worked on television with, Julie Bowen, who's an Emmy award-winning actress. She's amazing. She's done all the things you'd think. She had everything. And, you know, she has said this so that I'm not revealing anything, but I was at her house, this $4 million house in LA. She's yeah. on a big TV show. You know, she's got everything in the world that you would think you would want as an actress, right?
Yeah.
And she looked at me and she goes, don't you just think it's all going to go away someday? She's like, and I didn't actually live in LA at the time. And she goes, I never feel comfortable that I'm in my job and I'm comfortable doing, like, she just that feeling of uneasiness that we have to feel as actors. And then she said something to me that really stuck with me, which was, forget the business. Where do you want to live? Like mm-hmm. your quality of life as a person at some point has to take precedence. And I was like, I'm so freaking sick of the rat race. And I was like, I just want to go somewhere where I feel inspired.
Mm-hmm.
And that's here in Whitefish. Like, why Whitefish with all these artists? It's like, that's a lot of it. And we're also like nice to each other. Like we see each other and we're like, how can I work with you? What can I do? How can we lift each other up? Like, it really is an anomaly in this business.
It really is. And there are many times where I'm like, maybe I should just get back in the city. It'll be so much easier. And I'm like, but why? The whole reason would to try to basically make enough money just to get back here.
Yeah.
So I'm like, why leave here? You need to figure it out here.
Yeah.
And STEM. And yeah, this, that same thing of where it's like, this is what I love to do. This is a craft. And I feel the same way about music. I mean, finally having drumming come into my life, which happened in 2006 when I met a girl who was friends with David Blair and all these guys, because I met them through a film they made, a horror film called Paper Dolls. And that's how I met them. And we were in LA visiting them. And this girl pulled me aside. She's like, I've always wanted to be in a band. And I'm like, shut your mouth. I've always wanted to be in a band. And she's like, here, I want you to hear a song that I wrote. And she pulled me in the bathroom and sang me this amazing punk song. And I'm like, I will go buy a drum set next week. And she's like, I know some girls that want to start a band. And we came back to Whitefish. I bought a drum set. And this one girl, Carmen, who she taught me a couple basic beats and we were on, and we were this crazy five piece called Connoisseurs of Chaos. And that started my drumming career. And that the singer of that band and I, after that band disbanded, wrote a ton of music and were a duo for a long time. We ended up finding a bass player, became a band called Sapphire Shakedown that was really popular. And that broke up in 2020. And then I started during the pandemic, Erica Von Kleist would come over my place to have wine because we were in our little social bubble. And she's like, I want to learn to play bass. And I'm like, all right, get a bass guitar and come over to my house and we'll jam, dude. I want to do something with you. And then Halliday Quist got wind of it, came over, and then that's how Minx started.
Oh my God. And Erica Von Kleist was a guest on this podcast, and like, she's an incredible jazz musician. And to just think, like, I can just see her over a glass of wine being like, I want to learn how to play the bass. And she did it really well. Like, I came to guys' gigs and they were just amazing. And to think that you just had this natural ability to just pick up percussion. And I mean, you've now been doing it for like almost 20 years, right? Or 20 years this year.
Almost 20 years, like next year. Yeah.
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 And you're so good at it. And you play. And so not only do you star in shows at Whitefish Theater Company, but you play the drums for their shows as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Wait, that's Danny Wilkes up there playing the drums.
Oh, man. Yeah. That the whole theater, playing drums for theater, started in Missoula. I don't even know how, because I. After that first band broke up, that's when I finished my schooling in Missoula. I took off to Missoula. And I don't even know how it happened, but I ended up playing drums for a Nonsense show. There was a whole series of Nonsense, and it was like the Christmas Nonsense show. I had to play drums in a full nun's habit. And I'm like, oh my God, this is just ridiculous. But it was so funny. But that was the first time I ever came into contact with sheet music, you know, and doing percussion via sheet music. And so I was scared to death, but I figured it out. And then I got the opportunity to develop drum scores for two theatrical productions, one with Montana Repertory Theater, or Montana Actors Theater, a small company in Missoula. We did a production of the Scottish play, Macbeth, and I got to write a whole drum score for that. Oh, every character had lead-in music. They were intense with the djembe and tom-toms and the fight scenes. And then I got to pass the drums on to somebody and jump up as Lady Macduff and have my throat slit and watch my kids die and have my throat slit. Then I jump back on the drums. And then I got to do a drum score for Medea, which was absolutely intense and beautiful. And so that kind of started me drumming with the theater, which combined, it was the best of both worlds, combining that, having acting and theatrical experience, knowing dramatic moments, being able to bring percussion into dramatic moments and emphasizing things. It just played so amazing. Like, talk about my happy place.
Oh my God.
Playing drums for the theater.
That's so amazing, because I come from a percussionist family. My sister's a drummer. My dad's a drummer. My brother's a drummer. I drum with my feet. I have drummed a little bit on a cajon, and I was like, oh, I'm not terrible at it, but it's that rhythm, coming from that rhythmic place, it does affect your other form of artistry. But like, to think that you get to play the drums with like Shakespeare and punk bands and do all these incredible plays, and everything that you've been able to do is just, you know, it goes back to, it's a testament of like, follow your bliss and follow your heart and follow the feeling that you get in this business for what fulfills you, because it's not all about that stamp of Broadway. And I've talked about that before on this podcast, about the B word, because if I feel like so many people are like, I have to be on Broadway for me to be relevant. And it's like, no, you don't. Because I've seen a lot of shows that are literally have like no money and the most beautiful actors, the most beautiful performance. And then I've seen $1 million musicals that are crap that I've walked out of.
Yeah,
Broadway. And that's what this art form is. I mean, so that excitement that I just like felt, you like what you were saying and all of the bubbling of it, like it really is what this is all about. And just being able to thrive and have balance and continue doing what you love is kind of what life's about, right?
Yeah. Like it's an odd, like music, especially doing things live and like live performance. I feel like, especially in the time of AI and everything, until holographic technology gets so uncannily real, live performance is going to be so important because you know that human is making that happen. And because there is a lot of fear with AI taking over, you know, the arts and everything, being a voiceover artist as well, you know, with the audiobooks and everything, like there's so much talk about AI taking that over. That it's already affecting that industry. But I'm like, live performance, man, you know,
nothing will ever replace it. I really don't believe that, because we go back to all the way back to the Greeks, like why, and we know that from the pandemic, like, why do we all need to be in a room together? There is actually some kind of, and I'm not a scientist, but there's some kind of like study of the chemicals that go on and the energy, the molecular energy that goes on when you're in a room with somebody, whether it's music or a play, where that still moment you were talking about in your audition that happened when I saw you in the play in Misery, like that is palpable and you feel it and you crave it and you want more of it. And you're like, yeah, who the heck is going to be able to, you know, replicate that with AI? I just don't think it's possible. It is scary though. I know that it's shifting in our business, but it is, I just don't think anyone's going to get the pulse on that and be able to do it.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, it's same with music. It's like, for me as a drummer, like people all the time are like, oh, you should get an electronic kit and blah, blah, blah. You can do so much. I was like, yeah, but that doesn't move the air. It's just like when I'm hitting that bass drum, I'm physically moving air and you are feeling that. And it is so different, you know, it's such a different feeling. And so yeah, I would love the day when people, like, you're performing live and people come up to you and they poke you and they're like, oh my God, that's a real person. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. You know, instead, like, it's just like the world's going to get weird, but I don't know. I'm for it. I'm up for it. And like,
yeah, I'm up for I'm up for what AI could do that is good. I'm up for the shifting of the business, things like that. Like, I love all the live streaming stuff that happened in the pandemic and the ways that we can, you know, possibly monetize that as artists, because, you know, we're only one person and trying to make money and just with all live performance, you know, all of that stuff I feel like is good.
Yeah.
But you're so right. The feeling of the air shifting and that it's when someone walks into a room and the energy changes, that will never, I just don't feel that ever going away.
No. And AI AI ultimately will create its own art and it will express its own existential crises, you know, but it is a different intelligence and we're going to have to remember that, you know, and everything that we have developed a whole different type of intelligence and it is not the same as ours. It is not going to express the, you know, human beings are always going to have their particular experience and AI is going to have its particular experience. And it's going to be different. It's going to be different than ours, you know?
Absolutely.
And so, and it can try and mimic, it can try and imitate, but it's got its own thing. And I'm fascinated to see what it comes up with and what it's concerned about, because it's going to be very different than ours, you know? And so what'll be trippy is when we actually start doing plays and weird things together.
You know, and that's the artistry, you know, and that's the artistry of AI. I mean, I couldn't imagine like doing a, you know, if you were doing a podcast interview with me, the host who was AI, it wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't feel the same. We wouldn't have the same connection. And I'm just so thankful, you know, that we don't have that yet, that we don't have that kind of interaction yet. But I'm just so thankful that even though, you know, we live in the same town, we're, you know, coming at each other from screens, but I just feel the energy and the love and getting to know you with this interview is just so awesome. And I just really want, you know, we'll not have it be a podcast that will get us together.
Yeah. We all have to go out and get some drinks and hang, you know?
Yeah, because even though we're in a small town, it's like funny how, like, you know, we just haven't hung out that much. So I just am so, I'm just so thankful for your time and your artistry. And I think you are immensely talented. You're one of, like, literally becoming one of my favorite artists in the world. Like, honestly, like, you really blew my mind. I couldn't stop thinking about that play and all that you've done. And I just can't wait to see more of what you're going to do.
Yeah. Annie, I'm trying to think of, how I'm going to top Annie.
You will. There will be something else coming along. And is there anything else that, you know, you want to talk about or promote that's going on right now?
Oh gosh, well, I'm just poking around, a little free agent right now. I'm just finishing up another audiobook that kind of had to be put on hold due to construction across the street. But hopefully getting that going, and got another band that I'm talking to potentially maybe look to playing with. So, you know, there's things stirring in the pot.
Things stirring and bubbling here in Whitefield.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much, my friend. I had such a blast. And
thank you. You're the best.
Let's have a glass of wine soon.
Yes, please. Okay. Yes. Okay. All righty. Awesome. Thanks, Meredith.
Oh my gosh. That was so awesome.
Yay.
If you are hearing this message, you've listened to the entire episode of Confessions of an Actress. And for that, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. We hope you enjoyed this new episode of Confessions of an Actress. And if you did, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And also, remember, have vision for what you want and be grateful for where you are every single day. Have a great weekend, everyone.